What is up, Atlanta? This is the Mouths of the South podcast brought to you by Dirty South Soccer and CrossFit Vesuvio. CrossFit Vesuvio, the place where the New Year's resolution doesn't go to die, I hope. So if you've already given up on losing those 10 pounds, give CrossFit Vesuvio a try. If you haven't tried CrossFit, give them a try. You might like it more than you think. And Dirty South Soccer, obviously, everywhere you can, the main source, hopefully, for you in all your Barco Watch adventures.
Barco Watch!
And updates. What chapter is this now, Jay?
11 million.
11 million. our resident Photoshop specialist.
He is literally doing Photoshop right now while we are talking.
By the way, New Year's resolutions are a trap, people. I don't know why people even fall into that thing anymore.
I'm right there with you.
I love Jay's Barco boats, though.
Oh,
you guys like them?
They're fantastic.
Yeah.
How many have you done, Jay?
169.
That's too much.
That's just...
I don't think so. I think the question is, how many do independent... And how much do they require to make this transfer happen?
I feel like there is going to have to be at least 210 Barco boat
photos. What's 30% of 15 million?
They have really increased the value of your Barco boat photoshopping is suddenly...
Has gone
quite the commodity.
Absolutely.
And
I mean, have you seen them? They're done so well.
I just encourage Jay to keep going.
For those not watching on Facebook, like, he's actually working on one right now as we speak. And he's going to be working on a few during the course of the podcast.
Oh,
believe, right?
For sure. His hands are curled around his phone as he delicately swipes up, trying to get just the right movement of the face.
I'm
going to
end
photo.
Up having like an injury.
Yeah.
Whatever, man. I don't care.
Carpal tunnel.
Do what you got to do. It'll be worth it. You are the key to this deal happening. So do what you have to do. This is serious.
We need you and your thumbs.
I haven't gotten any work done like all week.
I've just been
looking at Barco Watch, looking at Jay's boats with Barco on them. And this needs to end soon for my sanity. And I'm sure that you guys are in the same boat and many Atlanta United fans. We really have lost
it. You did it.
Oh, my goodness.
I've been up to my neck in gamer sweat because I was helping out with the Smite World Championship. So I for one, was one of the people that were really glad nothing broke last week because I wouldn't have known about it until like midnight that night.
Then you must have smelled wonderful.
Oh, I mean, I'm telling you.
Like, I've done some job fairs at Georgia Tech, and let me tell you, like, that was rough.
I walked around with air freshener one day and just started
just around your neck. Like, you have like a stack of them that you just start handing people.
Yeah. You just slowly go around and start
air freshener. You win an air freshener. Like, that's the giveaway at like a booth. Like, please, deodorant. Like, just like a pile of deodorant. Please take one.
Kelly, tell us what you got in case something breaks while we're doing this podcast.
What do you mean? What do I got? I brought a bottle of champagne.
You brought a gift.
So I was absolutely determined that something was going to happen either yesterday or today, and I'm still.
I'm still trying to manifest it with my mind.
Yeah. It's imminent. And so I thought, hey, if anything happens, I'm going to bring a big old bottle of champagne and we are going to pop it and drink it if we sign Barco or we have like a legitimate rumor that Barco is signed tonight. And then I also brought a cake pop for Jay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Where's mine?
So, well, Jay won't have the champagne.
I don't drink, doofus. Mm. I get a cake pop.
I have to stuff it or something.
But if they don't sign him, can he have the cake pop? Because we're not going to drink the champagne.
Yeah, I mean, he can still have the cake pop.
Oh, so he gets the cake pop even if Barco doesn't come, can't have champagne.
You're being a jerk.
Well, I think
I didn't have a contingency plan here.
There's unlimited Coke Zero over there.
All right, fine. I'll settle.
Unlimited.
I'll walk out there and get you a monster.
I'm very frustrated and disheveled.
Yeah. Free monster.
Jay, you and I, I mean, Jay, Josh, you and I, after this episode, we'll go across the street, get a beer. It's okay.
I need a beer.
We got this, man.
I will go over there with you and drink a beer.
I will go watch you guys drink beer.
There we go.
While you work on Photoshop photos.
So the latest with the Barco watch, obviously that it looks like it's going to be finalized. Well, we want to say it's been rumored that it's going to be finalized at $15 million for 30% of the future sales. As long as that happens before 2019, after 2019, it's 20%. It's going to be 20%, and I think there's still some ongoing discussions about whether it'll be 10% after 2019. And that's really about it.
Middle 15%.
Right.
I mean, what's the problem here?
It seems like a good deal for Independiente because this is more or less the best you're going to get, I think. For Atlanta, it's not a bad deal. It's a pretty good deal. Especially since you know you're probably not going to get rid of them in 2 years or before 2 years. So you know you're going to get the most out of most return out of him when you do end up selling him?
By the end of 2019, so we're talking January transfer window 2020, right. The MLS rules may be completely different.
Yeah.
We take this 100% of
transfer
GDP.
Fee. Yeah.
I have a feeling that that could very well be the case with the way that things are changing in terms of we see the number of South American players coming in to other teams this year. Whether that was just a trend that was going to start anyways, or because Atlanta United, kicked off and said, "Hey, these are some great places
to
buy."
Reached a tipping point.
Yeah,
so to speak.
It's like South American invasion, like with the Beatles, right? And this is like it's all these South Americans.
Yeah, that's what it is.
It's
all these South American bands coming in.
Yeah. I mean, you got to hope that eventually MLS would have gotten that way, but I definitely think that Atlanta United has pushed it faster. They've definitely revealed that it's an avenue that should have been exploited a long time ago, and for now, for some reason, people are realizing it exists.
I think it was tried. It just without Tata, that connection is never going to be fully. You're not going to develop that pipeline as well as he could have. I think Tata really.
Absolutely.
Obviously helps.
And
big time.
It's not stopping Jason Christ from getting a Paraguayan. Nobody's sure. If Paraguay,
oh
man, if Christ.
If Jason Christ can get one.
They don't want to go play for there. Christ.
He might be there for a whole other season.
It was my dream ever since I was a child to play for Jason Christ.
I would love
Christ.
To get to play with him for a season before he's fired.
I think this transfer, you guys talk about MLS changing. I think this is a potential historic moment. In terms of, you guys talk about these South American players starting to come to the U.S. Now we're talking about one of the most highly valued players on that continent right now. So if this works, I think we've reached, as I mentioned earlier, a tipping point where we're going to see a lot more Ezequiel Barcos coming to Atlanta United and MLS in general in the future.
So many boats.
He came on the first boat, and I think we'll see quite a few more. One thing I thought was interesting.
So he's like the mate. Never mind.
We're losing it.
Say it and then you give up.
I thought it was interesting. Now,
I don't want to go down.
Basically,
that road.
this 20% number is just coming out. It's been like a slightly different story every day. And the only real sticking point, it seems, that we could tell is this percentage, the sell on clause. It was 30-10 at the start of the day. We wanted to go down to 10% after two seasons. And they wanted 30% for the full five seasons, which I thought was pretty crazy.
That is crazy.
And now we're at least seeing it seems that they're talking. I mean, they're trying to meet in the middle at that 20% number. But Independiente still wants 30% based on what's reported.
The middle is 8%. Independiente is going,
well, we heard Atlanta
20%?
Atlanta proposed 10%, and they wanted 30% the entire for the 5 years.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And they want to meet at 20% after that. After those 2 years.
So it was agreed 30% for the first year.
Here's the thing, but regardless of what the first two, they're not going to sell Barco in the first two years.
And definitely not the first year.
For sure.
It could be 90%. They're not going to sell him.
Yeah.
Right.
That's half the point.
And I think that's why Independiente are so insistent on this number at least staying
higher.
Above 10% because they know, and especially looking at Atlanta's ability to hang on to Miguel Amiron, who we think is going to be here two seasons, they recognize that Atlanta United does have the ability to keep this guy for two seasons and easily screw us. And there is a big difference between, I think, 10 and 20%. So I think we've talked about their kind of crazy negotiation stance. It's kind of coming into perspective here in that they want the sell-on fee is really what they value. And Atlanta United, I think we tried to play him a little bit by saying, oh, we're going to sell him in 2 years anyway. And they're realizing you guys are probably not going to do that.
Here's the thing that I do like about this, though. It's at the point now where both parties have agreed this is going to happen. Now we're just nickel and diming each other to get the best deal out of this possible scenario.
Independiente is the one under the most pressure right now. They're trying to sign this guy Silva, and they're going back and forth. I think a couple of their targets, they want more money they're offering.
And they've already sold one of their key guys to Ajax.
So what are the priorities here? Figure it out.
Absolutely.
Do you want a guy that's going to sit in the couch the rest of the season and be, hey, no, that's not going to happen.
Right.
It's going to disrupt your locker room. Olan doesn't want that,
Right.
Right.
So,
right.
I don't know. It's just...
Is there anything we should be worried about the fact that they've already gone back on their word before?
I don't think there's any worry that he's going. My worry is that... I think they essentially could just wait out January and see if a larger offer comes in from Europe.
But do you think it? at this point, I think that especially seeing everything that's gone on between Independiente and Atlanta United, I don't think any other team is going to want to come into the bidding war.
No, guys, Valencia, that's the question. Valencia's offered $19 million, says question. A Brazilian radio station.
Right, right. Valencia offered $19 again, and again, we look at the rumors. It's probably BS, but it gives you an idea of what Independiente wants.
It's like they're paying some guy in Brazil to drum up a story.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
They're giving guys some money. Say, here, please, make an article about this.
Don't just, I mean, this should be a great example as to not just look at the overall sell value, or yeah, the transfer fee. Because it could be $19 million, but how much of a percent are they going to get on from the sell-on?
Probably
sell-on
nothing.
Probably,
and yeah, I think,
exactly. I mean, it'd be a flat transfer.
I think that has to do with the debt that they're in, and they're desperate enough to sell Barco that he can go for a number like $15 million when he maybe could go for more if he waited. But you need the money
they're
so
just not
quickly.
Stupid. They know what this kid's going to be worth later on.
Yeah, and really, this indicates how valuable a player this is. And if you look at sell-on clauses around the world through the years, 30% is a crazy number, and I looked back at some sell-on clauses that have been activated over the past 5 years or so just to get an idea of what the precedent for these percentages is, and you look at it, and Raheem Sterling goes to Liverpool as a youngster. There's a 20% sell-on clause on that. Adam Lallana, Bournemouth to Southampton, very highly rated at that time, 25%. John Stones, young English player, goes to Everton. Barnsley, from Barnsley. And again, these are all situations where the selling club knows they're selling a player that's going to go for a large value later. That one is 50%. The only outlier I could find was David Bentley. Arsenal sold him to Tottenham when he, at one time, was seen to have the world at his feet, was a big bust. There was a 50% sell-on on that. So we're talking world-class, world-breaking prospect money here in terms of the sell-on fee. And when I saw that 30% number and that they want it for 5 years and they think they can actually negotiate that, shows what type of value this guy is. And it just makes me want him all the more here.
Right.
I mean, just spend the freaking money. I mean, it just shows you how much this guy is worth, that they really think that they can negotiate 30% over 5 years when you look at past players and the types of sell-on clauses they've had.
Well, I guess they've never dealt really with the MLS that much, so they're pushing to see how far they can push the envelope.
How much money they can
plus, at the end of the day, this is being directed by the VP, or reports the VP's son has been very aggressive on this. And so, you know, at the end of the day, all it takes is some bonehead to be involved in the process, you know, to cause confusion, where I'm sure Atlanta United office is leaving it up to, you know, professional staff, and they just set some guidelines. And, you know, whereas we, you know, maybe taking this long because an attorney in Independiente is waiting for the VP or the VP's son to get back with him and say, you know, okay, what do you think? You know, because why is it taking this long? You know,
that's the weird thing to me.
Like I told you before, are they sending faxes? Like,
or, they can't get on a phone and discuss this.
You know, what are they doing? So it's just bizarre. By the way, Kelly, your Photoshop is now out of Barco's dragon. Based off Peace Dragon. So there you go.
We're getting closer. I can feel it.
It's another one.
With every Barco tweet, we are closer from you, Jay.
Another one out.
I just wonder, has anyone actually done the math to see what, like, the best case scenario for 30%? Or for the, like, sell-on value of Barco, assuming he progresses and all that.
If he was sold for like $20 million, I think it was we'd get like $4 million back after we pay MLS. I think it was somewhere around that. I saw some numbers being thrown around. Mm. So,
I mean,
you know,
we could
like or $22 million if we sold
could
for 22
be talking
million.
About a $30+ million transfer. I'm not even
because
joking.
That's where my head's at. If he is as highly touted as he is, and a team's going to want 30% of the resale value in less than 2 years, let's just hypothetically say that happens. I don't think it's going to, but let's say it happens. You know, what kind of money are we talking about that we're selling him on for?
Good threads on Twitter where some folks that are MLS journalists have gone into some what-if scenarios and discussed, you know, if you took into account that you're not getting jersey fees and that you took into account the amount of money that we've invested in him and blah, 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 you'd still come out okay with, you know, even 20% after 2019 if he was sold for like $22 or $23 million. So I think at this point I can't see Atlanta United either going to try and get 15%, or they just say, you know what, forget it, 20%. I mean, and I think we'll be fine. I mean, it's not the perfect scenario, but at the same time, we want this player and we wanted to influence the season this year, so we pay for it a little bit on the back end. But, you know.
And if he is that big a prospect, 20%, as we've kind of just gone over, is about the going rate. And, of course, the first two seasons, 30% is massive. But they want to avoid Atlanta United getting them, just flipping them right away.
Yeah.
Right.
So I can
and who
see
knows?
It.
Maybe Atlanta United already had that as a baseline that said if they go to 20%, you know, so who knows? You know,
yeah,
it could be
exactly.
just a matter of them going, okay, fine, let's go.
Yeah, exactly.
At this point. So.
There's really nothing else that can change at this point, is there? I mean, the price has been going back and forth, but it's kind
the
of settled.
Has, I think the agent's negotiation has
I think
also
what you mentioned about another team maybe coming in.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I think we would have heard a lot more buzz about those numbers than about
that's what I think
the teams. And because I've heard nothing or we've seen nothing, I really don't think that exists.
Yeah,
I really don't think you'll hear random things from. Here's the other thing: the midnight thing is BS.
Oh, the midnight deadline.
Whoever tweeted that out, I forget who it was at the time, but whoever tweeted that out did not translate it right. The midnight deadline is not
were
a real thing.
Was it another way to say the end of the day, by the end of the day?
Well, Eric,
no,
you
it was
read
in
the
next,
story, right?
In the next few hours, it should be done, is what it was
that's
saying.
That's what all the other ones have said over the last week.
In a few hours.
And that's what they've been doing since Saturday.
This thing about midnight, this thing about midnight tonight, which I guess would have already, it will pass in about 10 minutes.
Somebody said that.
It's 9:48 right now, by the way.
Well, I guess
but that is nowhere in the original story that that was put
was
out.
Was it TYC Sports? Yep.
Well, it was circulated pretty
good,
widely.
It made for some good hype. So I'm for it.
It was just completely made
it
up.
It gave
That's
us something to focus on.
Yeah,
it was
give me something.
Made up.
It gave us a pure.
It gave us a time
small
like
amount of
instead
hope.
Of a few hours.
Yeah.
It gave us
a hard
exact time
deadline to like. Oh, okay. Yeah,
we have to go. I have to kind of go off. Gut feeling on this has to be over soon, though, because there's only so many.
What was your gut on Sunday
that this has to be over soon?
Just saying,
you thought it was gonna happen
my
like Tuesday,
on
right?
Sunday was that was gonna happen Tuesday. Yeah,
my
gut
when I said I was gonna start making Photoshops on Saturday night was like
you were gonna get to like 20.
36 hours max.
Well, hey,
I'll make like 20 of them.
It'll
Here
be we
fun.
Are, Thursday,
yeah,
and you're at 170
ending.
Now.
And wanted a lot more.
Now you got to keep going because now the next player that we end up
if I stop and we don't if I stop and this deal falls through. I will have to delete my account.
This is the sacrifice.
Well, we can't have
this
that.
This is the sacrifice of the dread god right here.
Yeah.
Do we think after Barco that we have any more transfer stuff coming?
I do. Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I think we won't see any major stuff unless Carmona goes. Then you might see another experienced center midfielder coming in.
And I'm not doing Carmona Photoshop, so y'all can take a hike.
I still think he's not going anywhere. I think he's fine.
I think we would have heard something more along the lines of that with Colo-Colo.
At the end of the day, the fact that it's only coming out of Chilean media and the fact that Doug Robertson, who never reports on transfer rumors himself, came out to say on Twitter, this is not what I'm hearing. And that's enough for me to go, this isn't going to happen.
Yeah, this isn't going to happen.
And even Rob Usry came out and said something, which is very unusual.
Yeah.
So,
Well, it shows you the club is speaking directly to
possibly.
People. And again, whether it's kind of the reverse Independiente role reversal where you're saying he's not for sale, obviously on a lesser scale than Barco and you're floating it out there or not, whatnot. But it does feel like Carmona is staying. But it's a good question, Kelly. And I think the real issue is if we don't get Barco, which I don't even want to think about, but if we don't, where do you go from there?
Right.
I think that's the worry in terms of transfer business. And then, of course...
My whole worry, though, with that is if that happens to not go through, how much time do we have? I mean, I'm sure we still have a good amount of time because we picked up Joseph in mid-January of last year. So we still have...
We'll have time. We'll have plenty of time.
Like a couple of weeks. Yeah. But, I mean, we start training soon. And then, you know, and then there's the whole separation between first team and now second team with the USL with
USL segue.
Atlanta United 2, everybody.
Dos.
So this week, Atlanta United, on Tuesday, January 9th, they announced that the USL, the much-awaited USL name, was Atlanta United 2, much to the dismay of all Atlanta United fans who did not want that to be the name. Unfortunately, that is what we have. Thoughts, comments? I mean, I'm going to play the devil's advocate, which I will fight on the side of Atlanta United, even though I don't really want to, because I do think
You've just totally taken away. You're like, I'm going to be devil's advocate, but I don't want to be devil's advocate.
I'm just saying, I think, I don't like the name. I will be completely honest. But I think in the terms of trying to keep it as being one club and sort of all under one umbrella, it makes sense. It's this idea that the Atlanta United Academy members can then move up from the Atlanta United Academy and go to Atlanta United 2. And then they can make themselves, move themselves up to the first team, which is Atlanta United. So keeping it all under one umbrella, I think it's a good idea. And then especially Atlanta United, they put out together, article here in the announcement saying that Atlanta United 2 is the fundamental link in our club's vertical integration, connecting our academy teams, like I said, to our first team, and basically saying that this team gives us a chance to challenge academy players at the professional level while also giving our first team players an opportunity to stay match fit when they are returning from injury. So
the only thing that would have been worse is if they used the word synergy in their tweet. Vertical alignment. Give me a break. I mean, listen, I tweeted out that as a fan, I think we have a right, especially when there was so much when it was this was announced. I mean, there were threads and threads and threads of people giving their ideas, like, this is a fun game, right? Let's see what it is.
Let's
named.
Name ATL.
There were so many good names
and,
that came out.
And I never saw one person go Atlanta United 2. In fact, I saw most people going out of their way to say, I hope it's not one
Atlanta
of those boring
United.
B-team, two-team names. And what I was surprised with is when I came out, this was immediately minutes after it was announced. Doug Robertson accidentally pre-announced it.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Did he do that?
And so I jumped on that before the announcement. The only thing I can think of is it was a scheduled tweet, and Atlanta United dropped the ball and forgot they didn't go in.
I'd like to know the answer to that.
Either way, so
how early did he announce?
Just like a couple minutes before. Oh, okay. Yeah, like minutes. But you know me, I got that, and I was like, retweet. So, I was surprised by the number of people that immediately said, "This is fine. I totally expected this," because that is not what I was seeing people say.
Not at all
before. And so, and then all of a sudden, like people were like, "You need to get over it." No, I don't. I'm a fan, and I should have the right to expect that our marketing team would put some creative brain power into this and come up with something exciting. I love Swope Parks Rangers. I love that name. That, if you don't know, that's the B team or the two team for Sporting KC, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I don't have the answer. Like, is there a name example I'm going to give you that they should have used that I think would have been great? No, that's not the point. The point is,
I still like G Unit.
Yeah. The point is, you come up with it. Create an identity, and then people are like, but then it won't be tied to Atlanta United. No, bozos. It was always going to have the same color scheme.
Right.
It was always going to have the same. So if I have an Atlanta United fan roll into a match with my Atlanta United kit, I don't look like a complete moron, right? Or I don't have to go and buy new merch for a Gwinnett team. That was always going to happen. Nobody ever said that wasn't going to happen. If you thought that wasn't going to happen, then you're crazy. What I'm saying is at least give it an independent name and some sort of identity. So if you live in Gwinnett and you've never made an Atlanta United match, you're like, this is our team. This is our team. You know what I mean? This is Atlanta's team. That's in Gwinnett.
No, now it sounds like you're going – because before you could have been the Gwinnett whatevers, the Atlanta whatever. You could have named it something
original.
Or don't
even get a city in it. Don't put a city in it.
Whatever you want to name it, that it wasn't ATL UTD 2. Now you made it sound like you're going to see a minor league
team.
Now you
correct.
Made it
and
sound
here's the
like
thing. On the forefront. And people, here's the people's arguments, right? I was so amazed. People, I'm like, listen, I'm not saying I'm not going to go see the team. I'm not saying I'm not excited about it. I'm not saying I'm not going to go see Andrew Carlton play. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, this is something that is going to take away huge amounts of ticket sales. What I am saying is it makes it difficult, especially if you are someone who lives in the Gwinnett area or in that region and you're looking for a team to get excited about.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's hard to get revved up when you're like, you know what, this is the joke I said, or someone put a great joke. They said, I'm going to see Atlanta United too. And someone said, oh, can I come too? And they're like, yeah, you can go see them. You can go see the twos. I'm going to go see the other ones. You know what I mean? Like, it's just you set yourself up for this situation where people are going to go, well, I guess they don't care all that much. So why should I care? And sure, are the hardcore fans the ones that are on Twitter that are arguing with me and saying, well, if you don't go because of that, then, well, of course, those fans are going to go. But will it shave a percentage off here or there? Because people are like, well, it's just, well, this isn't the Atlanta
here's
United.
Here's my question.
Yeah, maybe. You know. And I'm not saying that the logo is a problem. I don't care about the logo. The logo's fine. I'm just saying.
He says,
well, I mean, what else are you going to do with a number, not, two, a number two? Right? What else are you going to do with a number two?
With
right.
that logo. Just
with
put
the
it on
logo.
There.
And I've seen just either two. And God bless you, Chris. I love everything you've put out. But the designs that you put out with the two spikes, I don't like them at all. And so maybe that's why they just left the two. But two spikes, it's just, it was empty in the center of the logos that were put out.
Here's my question with the USL team. And I feel like this is maybe where, even though our front office sort of... let us down with the team name and the
but they didn't let everybody down.
They didn't let everybody in, and people are fine with it. But I feel like what's might end up happening, which I'm totally okay with, and or would ask for the fans to do, is just like the first team. We have the nickname, the Five Stripes. Why can we, as a USL team, not make a different nickname? And then that's
it's
what they
happening.
Brand themselves after.
There's already people nicknaming it the Spikes, the G Unit, whatever you want to name it.
Then take that and run with that.
That's
and then
fine.
Just the name just happens to be a secondary thing.
But I'm not
thing.
Getting paid to create the name. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there are people that get paid to do this. You know what I mean? Like, that's great. They have a nickname. Here's, I'm not saying that. But at the same time, that's not what's printed on the face of the ticket. That's not what's put in the branding. And that's not what people are saying they're going to go see.
Go ahead, Eric.
And that's the problem. The problem is that I wanted to go out and buy... USL merchandise with
some
weird name.
G-Unit hats.
I wanted to buy that stuff.
It'll look like a knockoff Atlanta United jersey.
Soccer fans are already pretty hipster as it is. This would have made it even more hipster, and people like to see that those unique aspects of...
And that's the thing. I'm not saying, like, this is not, like, when I was... And I had to follow up with some tweets to clarify that this is not, like, I'm not outraged, right? This is... I moved on literally... 20 minutes after this whole thing went out.
Yeah, no, same here.
Yeah.
Boring moved on, okay? The fact that I went and looked up your Instagram account and it doesn't even have a logo on there yet shows how much you care about Atlanta United, too. Let me just put it that way. So maybe people should be a little more upset, because when I went to the Instagram account, nothing's there. So if you're going to announce it, and by the way, Atlanta United, maybe you should put your schedule in your Android app by now.
Okay? That's what he's really pissed off about.
But
that's what he's really
pissed
off about.
Not that big of a deal, right?
It's all about the Android app.
At the same time...
He's not angry, folks. This is him not angry.
At the same time, this was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I agree.
So it wasn't a, like, failure. It was a missed opportunity. It was something you could have gone above and beyond. You could have taken that next step. You really could have done something special. And sure, at the end of the day, does the name make a difference between the sales or how well the team plays? Or as Rob Ustreet took a side eye maybe at me or others that said, you know, well, maybe the team's playing well, people go see, even though it's kind of a boring name, right? Well, of course. That's not what I'm not saying that. Nobody's saying that.
Yeah, people are going to still go see this team. It's just it could have been something unique to the region that they're playing in, the city, the county, whatever.
They're going to be moving it to Marietta, though, is my understanding.
Fine. Make it something
like, how
that
would you like to be living in Gwinnett? Be like, so, you know, that team that's taking up that space there, like, oh, well, you mean the Atlanta team that's, like, renting our space? You know what I mean? Like,
you know how weird?
It's not even their team.
It's going to be so weird to explain this to a non-soccer fan. And that's ultimately what you were going after for these.
Yeah, why should I support the USL team?
It's to gain more fans, and I don't think this is going to be helpful.
This was going to be the catalyst to getting the people who maybe are living too far outside of Atlanta to go to the games. This is going to be the catalyst to get them excited about Atlanta United, get their kids to go to an Atlanta United 2 game.
Think about when Indy comes down and plays,
that sounds boring.
Indy just joined, right? Huge team, massive support base, ultras, the whole deal, right? Proper USL team came over from NASL, coming over this year. They're coming down to play. I mean, just the crap you got to get for, like, showing up, right? And people are like, oh, we're going to play the two team. Like, good job. You know what I mean? Just the banter alone.
It sounds like these guys are the backups. It sounds like these guys are the young guys.
Right.
And this could have been its own team in itself. And that's where I think the perception is going to be that this is.
I just wanted some of these guys. We always knew they were going to be tied to Atlanta United.
Right.
That was never the question.
Exactly.
It was how much of their own identity would they get? And now they get zero.
Right.
Zero of their own
identity.
And
here's why I think they did it, is because they basically made a statement saying we don't care as much about the on-field product being top quality here. We care about developing young players out of our academy, and
that's
we might lose some games doing that. And that's one of the criticisms of developing young players in the U.S. is you don't sacrifice winning for development. So maybe they're by coming out with this bland name and not marketing hard on social media is because they want it to be, yeah, something for the fans, but more so just for the club and Atlanta United.
For the development.
Atlanta United MLS team.
I'm sorry, Josh. I disagree. At least make an Instagram account ready to go. I mean, you know what I mean?
I will agree with that.
This is not rocket science.
So.
Right.
And I love the guys over there, Ryan Cantonese, the whole deal, Chris Winkler. I love their marketing team. I love their communications team. But to me, this smacks of a bit of laziness. And maybe there were metrics involved. Maybe this was about branding and keeping symmetry. Hell, maybe they went to their tax attorney. He said, can you just please name it two to make it easier
sure.
for me? I have no idea. But at the same time, they must have known the hype about it. You know,
My question is, how long did it take them to figure out?
I don't think it was a big discussion.
It seems like they did it on purpose. And I think, and again, I think the reason is, you know, you guys mentioned gaining fans
maybe
further away.
These things. Maybe they were just focused purely on what you're
having that team form its own identity. I think they're saying, we don't want that. This is the Atlanta United reserves team.
I just,
we're not here to create another Atlanta United.
I already feel like we've dedicated more time to this topic than they did.
I just really want a G Unit merch. That's really all I wanted.
But another thing we haven't really dived into,
how much MLS has anything to do with this? Whether they could have named it something else?
Why? Because they're
I don't know. Well, maybe of course maybe they could because have. They're yeah, tied no. to an MLS team, they could. They,
no,
they couldn't
I don't think
name
they had anything to do with it.
Because that
seems to me that if anything, MLS would be like, oh, can we, you know, or USL would be like, can we make some merch sales? Like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You think somewhere along the lines, you know, there would have been some sort of money grabbing aspect of it. So it would have been the opposite. So I think if anything, it had no involvement.
I'm just saying.
Maybe they have a different home kit.
If no other team has a unique name like that, that ties to MLS. Well, never mind.
Think of all the SKCS, listen, right? Guys. So here's the thing, guys. Imagine all of the Atlanta United 2 stickers that are going to be sold that you could slap on top of your Atlanta United badge when you go to a match. I mean, just the sticker sales alone. It's going to be tremendous.
Let's get the sticker sales.
I think we should move on because
they're going to need to make money somehow for this. So I feel like maybe what they do is do a different home jersey.
They're not going to make money. Most of these teams lose money on their guess what the ones that lose the most money are the ones
that
name the twos and the bees.
That's what I think they're saying. They do not care about the money part, which is
unfortunate because I think the USL is a growing league, and I think that they could use a little bit of caring.
And maybe in time that'll change.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, I don't have anything else to add on that topic. Yeah. But let's talk about the Mercedes-Benz. Since actually, there seems to me there's more people outraged about this than there was on Atlanta too. I do not care about this.
The offseason is a scary, scary place.
But Mercedes-Benz Stadium tweeted out that they are opening up the entire stadium for four matches. And then they listed those matches, and they are March 11th for DC United. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So much sense.
June 30th, which is the weekend before 4th of July, Orlando City. Makes
a lot
of sense.
Well, it's also against Orlando. So.
July 15th, Seattle Sounders. And then this outlier that we talked about a little bit before the podcast of September 22nd.
Right, because I just didn't understand
why Real Salt Lake.
Yeah, well, the team, why that, well...
Well, it makes sense now.
The schedule was determined already, but why that day?
So Eric looked it up and noticed that it's the last evening, like 7 p.m. game of the year.
Right.
There are some, I think, 4 o'clock and stuff like that. But
before playoffs.
I will say it's the last scheduled one. I think there's the two last games are TBD, so
right.
That may change. And chances are they're going to open up to more than just more games.
And so there was a bit of outrage. I think I missed most of it on my timeline, but I did catch a few tweets where people were upset. I guess some people had the expectation that they would open up all of them. I think that's a minority of people. I think that's crazy. I don't think I have to explain why that's a bad idea,
Were they stating?
should we explain it for the people that maybe don't understand?
I feel like they were doing that, though, because of the they wanted as many tickets sold as possible.
They want exclusivity. They you can't sell the tickets that you're selling now. Yeah, you got to drive the hype. You got to, you know, again, maintain exclusivity. You open up the whole thing, all of a sudden those tickets you get outside the stadium, they're a lot cheaper.
Plus, the model that they used last time worked pretty well in terms of the schedule of when they did it. You know, the okay, we're going to do it the last match. We're going to do this match. Even some, I remember some people thought that other Orlando game, was it one Orlando game? One of the two was open for 70,000, but not both? I can't remember.
It was the one that came to the Mercedes-Benz, and that was the one that was 3-3.
So, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm sure they have metrics that they pull, but by no means do I think that this is going to be the only four matches that are opened up to 70,000. No. And if you have not attended a Atlanta United match before, what you may not realize is that we do at least have a curtain that comes down and sort of covers the top tier of the stadium when it is at a what the normal capacity 45,000 or whatever that is, and so that at least helps to get away from that empty football stadium or empty stadium look and feel. But the risk is if you open it up to 70,000 and you don't fill that area up there,
you look bad.
It can look really bad. It can look pretty terrible on television. And this is even more important, high stakes for Atlanta United, because there's what, 16 or 17 nationally televised Atlanta United matches.
We have
this
year. Most, I believe.
We're tied with LAFC.
There's some people on the Facebook chat that are talking about, you know, we should open up the whole thing. You know, four games is soft.
Why do we care?
Much like Atlanta United wants to keep the exclusivity on the tickets, they want to keep the exclusivity on the actual atmosphere as well. That way, it drives the demand to actually go to a game where the whole thing is open.
Yeah. To see it live in person.
You don't get that if the whole stadium's open all year round. You're not going to sell 70. It's not realistic to think we'll sell 70,000 tickets.
That's what
every game
people are missing
for the full season.
Right.
That's not realistic.
There will be empty seats if they open up that stadium.
Why is this rush to break our own records? I mean, we already set all these records last year.
Relax, guys.
This is our second season. Can we just focus on some good soccer? Can we focus on winning the MLS Cup? Like, I could care less about whether the stadium's open for four matches or seven matches for 70,000 people.
Right.
And because I'll tell you why, at the end of the day, the atmosphere, there have been some of those matches where at Bobby Dodd, I felt the atmosphere was more electric than it was
for a couple
of those 70,000 matches.
Because of the intimacy of the...
It's down to the opponent at the end of the day. I can tell you, I don't know what kind of buzz we're going to get with even 70,000 people playing against RSL unless it turns into another New England Revolution situation where we put seven up on them.
But here's the other thing.
You know, how rowdy is going to get watching those guys?
We spoke a lot about this when last year, but the novelty of the stadium is going to wear off. Sure. Eventually, you may be able to fill 70,000.
Yeah,
game
and
game
people
out.
Actually put their butts in the seats.
Right now, even with 30,000 at
the
beginning of the game, it didn't look awesome. It looked fine.
It takes a while for these people to fill in. Look at some of the college games that went on.
It looked ridiculously empty because
everyone's
checking out the stadium
because they're all from out of state.
Yeah, I was sitting there with my father watching the championship game, and I was looking at the stadium, and I was like, you know, they sold all these tickets, but it looks so empty. And my dad's like, oh, everybody's just walking around the game right now. And, like, walking around the stadium because it's the novelty of the stadium, which I can completely get.
Which, by the way, I highly recommend because that's how I ran into Minnesota player.
With a baby?
Who was injured. And I ended up,
Who was that again?
With the man bun. I ended up hanging out with him for the whole match. So, you know, sometimes good things happen when you roll around like a casual. So...
Right. But
plastic. You're such a
but
plastic.
But I will say, I mean, the great thing about the soccer compared to football, I don't know why I'm getting on that right now, but this whole thing about, like, the seats not being full. I mean, with soccer, with all of us, when you stand, the rush to get the seats filled quicker at the beginning of the game is more of a priority when it comes to football. I know I get on a weird tangent, but I'm basically saying that there's a more likely possibility that the seats will be fuller, but it doesn't mean that we need to have the capacity for 72,000 every game. And
by the way, they did fill the 77,000 for the national championship, didn't they?
Yeah.
I didn't even know you could go that high.
Eventually.
But it never looked like
5,000 standing tickets.
Did you guys see the first quarter?
Yeah,
half the lower dome was practically empty because people were just walking.
That's
around.
What we were talking about.
They must have had like 5,000 standing room tickets on that bridge or something.
They must
That's
have
crazy.
Been. I mean, I could totally see it.
I don't know.
I just think someone's challenging me on the whole binary of either four or every single game, and you can add a couple more games, but I still want that exclusivity of having just a few matches where the whole thing's full. That way, you have something to look forward to at different points during the season. Mm-hmm. Specifically against a team like Orlando, the last game of the season, all that stuff.
And they remember also the All-Star game will be in August. They announced that date, so that'll be 70,000.
Sure. That'll be open.
I completely forgot about that. So that's five people.
Five
that's
guys.
Five. Although it's not really Atlanta United, but that's five.
And I would just, yeah, tell the people out there that want to open it every game that that would happen in time if, and this is something Eric has said a lot, if the demand is there.
Do you think we could sell out a U.S. men's national team game in the that they played this year?
They would open it up.
77,000?
They'd open it up, but I don't think they'd get that many.
No.
Well, no. I'm really excited about the prospect of a U.S. game in Atlanta. I think it's only a matter of time until we see the men's national team here, and they definitely
they might have some work to do.
Well, we're losing players left and right. Jonathan Gonzalez being one of them.
Yeah, you want to talk about that?
And I'm kind of upset about that. So, did you guys get? Are we good with the?
Explain the backstory of everything that just has gone on.
Days. And I think this is a big story for a few reasons. The basic spiel here is that Jonathan Gonzalez is one of the top young players I think in North America right now, who capped with the U.S. youth national team, is from California, but went to Monterrey. I think 3 or 4 years ago as a youngster, and then came up through their youth system and starred for the first team this last season, and is back in the fold again right now. He decided to switch his file a one-time switch and play for Mexico. And
now, he played from all the way to U14s all the way up,
he
right?
He has been a part of the system, and he has been one of the names that U.S. soccer have pointed to try to convince us that things are changing. That things are going in the right direction. There are still some other things they can point to, but I think losing this kid, a kid who in a lot of ways represents the types of players we talk about, the Federation and how the scouting is ignoring the Latino population. And here's a player with Mexican parents from the U.S., you get him. He plays for your youth national team, and he goes to Mexico for 4 years in those prime development years in his teenage years and decides he wants to leave. And what really, really bothers me
about
this—
Didn't even get scouted by— There wasn't even a U.S. scout.
No
scout. When he got scouted up by a Mexican team.
It felt like they just took him. It was so easy. And what really upset me was the reaction from the higher-ups in the Federation and people in U.S. soccer just kind of— Well, he's got to make the decision that's best for him, and this was always coming.
If he feels Mexican,
right?
Like, and that, what does that mean?
That's exactly
how
the quote.
How do you feel?
Those are the exact quotes I want to hit on, Jay.
So
there are two different quotes. The first one is from Thomas Rongen, who is the chief scout with the U.S. The chief one scout. Yeah,
he
recently told us that there is only one full-time scout for the Federation.
Awesome.
And he basically said what you said, Jay. He said he would have liked to play for the U.S., but you know what? His dad is so Mexican that he wanted him to represent Mexico, and I knew it was a losing battle probably. So again, defeatist attitude with a kid that is in your youth system. It's a losing battle. We're not going to fight for him. Tab Ramos, who of course is a dual national himself from Uruguay, actually one of my favorite childhood players, a big part of the youth coaching system, said something similar. He said, if we have players in this country who feel Mexican and want to play for Mexico, I think they should play for Mexico.
It's a lazy excuse.
If we have players who feel American, who want to fight for the U.S. and represent America, they should play for us.
But not. I like how you didn't use the word fight for Mexico. Like, when you're giving up when you're going to Mexico, fighting.
So let's.
What is that?
But let's identify the real crux of the issue with these quotes and how they're emblematic of the arrogance.
Slightly xenophobic?
The arrogance. That doesn't help. That doesn't help.
Or at least it could be interpreted that way. Right. Whether he was being it, I don't know.
They can be.
If you don't want to play for us, fine, but we're still the better team.
Here's what I don't like.
When
it comes to soccer, feeling American doesn't mean anything. American soccer is in its infancy, and it's still establishing its culture and identity, and that culture and identity should be a part. The immigrant population should be a huge part of that. And we're very lucky to be in a country with this diversity where all of these people that come from established soccer cultures can build a unique, dynamic identity for the game here. And instead, for some reason, the Thomas Rongens and Tab Ramoses of the world want these guys to step into their world.
We should be thanking them than their parents. Right. They should be going about thank you for bringing this kid here.
Exactly.
And this bizarre idea that there's an American way of playing soccer right now, there isn't one. And
it's tried that in Trinidad.
Yeah, right. And we've seen it.
Didn't work out so well.
And people talk about how the lack of inclusivity in U.S. soccer. And I think the fact that a player like Jonathan Gonzalez, who was with the national team, leaves from age 14, 15, Was he 18, 19 years old now?
I think he's 19.
19 years old. And during that period, decided, I don't want to play for the U.S. men's national team. He doesn't not feel American. He grew up in the U.S. He doesn't feel American soccer. And that's the problem that we have. And we need to include the Jonathan Gonzalez's in that instead of saying, oh, his dad's from Mexico. He's going to go play for Mexico.
Yeah, like that's a viable excuse. Not excuse, but a viable choice.
Yeah, well, I understand what he did, but the reaction is what's bothering me, this idea that he should have been fitting in with us when really we should be fitting in with the Jonathan Gonzalez's of the United States, and we're not finding them, we're not locating them.
We should be giving every player an opportunity to fit in with the
absolutely.
Team.
I mean, that's how this works.
I just don't understand. He got left off the friendly against Portugal.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure a guy who has made the best 11 for Liga MX, who has shined in with Monterrey. I don't know how you don't give someone like that, obviously a shining star, a chance to prove himself against or at the senior level. Yeah. I just don't. Well, I don't understand.
And
I don't
at the end of the day, right? It's been very hard for me to even pay attention to soccer Twitter the last few days because there's so many people looking to get angry about something
so
at this
much
point.
Photoshop.
There's so much finger pointing in terms like sexist or culturally insensitive or xenophobic, where I feel like a lot of dialogue is shut down, which is the last thing that we need. We need people to feel comfortable coming out and having discussions around these things. Where I'm not saying that some of this stuff is wrong, but it's also just very reactionary, and it's always from the same people, the same journalists, the same, you know, soccer Twitter heads that do this stuff. And the thing is, there are really real discussions or tweets that I'm not seeing about, maybe from a couple people, about the lack of organizational structure, the problems that this is more than to do with just the presidential position, that this is deeper roots. The term cultural, I'm so sick of hearing that.
Yeah.
There's actually maybe cultural issues, but also a lot of it is if you have one scout, how are you going to go catch a guy like this?
Right.
Maybe the guy whose responsibility was to make sure to call him, his calendar filled up and he got distracted with all the other things he's got to do. Some of this comes down to just business sense, where organizationally, you know, there are things breaking. And if you've got this huge surplus of money, maybe you need to reinvest it in your infrastructure, such as resources, instead of firing coaches or scouts.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Latino scouts that are now having to set up private organizations, and they're the ones scouting the players that you're losing anyways.
Yeah.
Right.
No, and
instead of shouting, you know, racist from the top of your lungs constantly, and actually sit down and actually, you know, talk about where this is rooting from, you know.
Right.
Right.
No, and the system is broken top to bottom. And the one thing that always shines through is that arrogance and that closed-mindedness and refusal to learn from others when there's so much precedent for how to make things work in this sport. I mean, it's kind of the most popular sport in the
world.
It's
really going to make the coach ends up being in a few years really interesting, you know, see if they've after three or four years how much they've moved on. So
I'll say now I'm more excited, and I don't know how much influence you'll have over this, but I'm more excited now about the change at FIFA presidency than anything else after.
I feel
after
bad because I don't know how much they're going to be able to do, and if once they do get the board may have voted to completely revoke most of their privileges or abilities to create policy and stuff and assign it to this operational GM type
role.
And
one of the things that worries me really is we're so far deep down this rabbit hole that even if a Ronaldo or a Martino or whoever forward-thinking president steps forward, do they know the system and where it's broken and how to fix it?
And they're already all under fire anyways by the personalities that run soccer Twitter for being either making statements that are potentially xenophobic and saying things, blaming Costa Rican fans and Kyle or other publications calling Ronaldo a lunatic. I mean, the amount of just...
Ronaldo might be a lunatic.
The amount of Twitter outrage and the fervor around all of this.
But little substance, right?
And the thing,
very little.
The thing is, these guys are trying to put out policies and talk about this stuff, and they get shut down, you know, because they say something maybe a little ineloquently, or you just don't appreciate or agree with you can disagree with them, but a lot of finger pointing going on. So it's hard to solve anything if the people that purport want to change things are constantly you know, pointing fingers and talking how disappointed they are in Kyle Martino or how, you know, disappointed they are and when not, maybe let them try to run and do this thing and get in there and try to advocate some change.
Although I would like to see them say how they're going to do it. I mean, we all know the end game should be.
Kyle Martino tried that and he got himself into a puddle with the venue gate because he had the most in-depth probably
and that
piece
interview,
in terms
which
of
I
that
just
Q&A
was quite good. He seems to have the most specifics, but again, with the way things are broken, and again, I go back just real quickly to these quotes about Jonathan Gonzalez. It indicates people know it's broken and they don't care, that's the story of U.S. soccer. Is we don't want you to come to us. We're not going to go find you. We want you to come to us. And even when you've got someone like Jonathan Gonzalez and he leaves for 3-4 years, he realizes how much better the system is in other countries.
At the end of the day, if he had made this decision, and we know that the U.S. soccer and USSF had done everything else they possibly could to keep him, got to his house, make the phone calls, fine. But that's not what happened.
Eric brings up a great point. Why would you not cap him in the Portugal game? Or even in the – I mean, you could –
Just bring
even
him.
The qualifiers.
Just bring him. You don't even have to cap him. Just bring him.
Yeah. Even the World Cup qualifiers. And at least if you don't get him, you could say, well, we did our best. We tried to cap him at the end of qualifying.
Right.
And we didn't do it.
Before we move on to something real quick, and answer real quickly because we don't want to spend too much time on this, but if U.S. makes the World Cup, do you think he makes a change? Does that matter?
It's to be too late.
It's too late. It's a one-time transfer.
He's going to be
I'm saying that. If they had made the World Cup.
Oh.
50-50.
That's tough. I have no idea. If he felt in any way slighted, you know, disrespected, then probably not. If this was just a matter of where he saw more opportunity and that's truly what it was about, then
I think ultimately it was a combination of the two.
Yeah. I think it was as well.
So question of the day, and we can start doing this if we get good questions, but question of the day, will Mikey Ambrose be the Mikey Ambrose. Will Barco
you've already ruined it, Eric.
Will Barco be the shortest player on the team? Barco's 5'6".
Oh, I did see that.
How tall is Mikey Ambrose?
No, because Joseph's 5'6", isn't he?
I don't know.
Or is he like an inch taller?
Hence the question. Will he be the shortest one?
This may come down to like 5'6" and a quarter, 5'6".
Yeah.
They're going to have to go back
Joseph,
to back.
It says he's 5'7", but...
I'd like to see...
Now, he's with or without, you know, shoes.
Yeah.
I'd like to see a picture of Barco on the back of Joseph, who's on the back of LGP. That'd be a good photo. And a kangaroo.
Oh, my gosh.
Because
that
LGP
is, that
loves
is one
kangaroos.
Thing I will say, though, with Yamil not coming back. Yamil was always the one that would jump on everybody or have the most...
Now it's Barco's turn.
Now it's Barco's turn. So...
The wheel of life.
Who's the lightest? Because you could throw Almir on there for the lightest, right?
Well, Joseph's
for sure
built, so.
Yeah, Joseph's
probably Miggy.
It's probably Miggy. Miggy's thin.
Yeah.
He's got those chicken legs.
He's got the least muscle on him.
All right, any final thoughts? Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that's one of the reasons why.
Just remember to go out and buy your Land United 2 merchandise. Oh, wait.
Salty.
I have no comment other than, like, I really wanted to open up that bottle of champagne.
Yeah, well,
looks like
you're not gonna get your wish tonight.
Kelly's been drinking alone.
Like. Let's see. Do we have someone update Twitter real quick? Nope.
They posted something recently on Barco Watch.
There's nothing happening.
Stop it.
Let's get out of here.
Yeah.
It's everybody just saying tomorrow.
To help us pass the time, guys. Something hilarious I noticed for the last week or so is this Google Translate situation on Twitter.
Oh, yes.
So one of our listeners out there, Frank Morrow,
this is awesome.
Told me he was getting into some debates here with the Independiente fans, and it seems some things are being lost in translation.
Big time.
As one of the retorts to one of Mr. Merrill's comments based on Google Translate.
I also like how Frank doesn't include, he doesn't show us what he's saying
back. Yeah, I
want
to see what he's saying back.
Conveniently to drum up this kind of tweeting at him.
So he got a bunch of great ones, but first of all, the word salami was mentioned multiple times.
I did see that.
And here's salami. A good one. And I'm not salami. The Atlanta tempted the representative and the player before talking to the club. Zero ethics. The MLS has no experience to make passes of players. What else we got? The Atlanta not ruined the career to anyone. Not be salami. The theme here was the representative and intermediaries. Boat is not a baby's chest.
Boat is not a baby's chest.
This is great stuff. I'm going crazy on Twitter, as I said, refreshing this. Can you guys tweet
some hilarious Google Translate stuff.
The best ones
are
Portuguese media trying to understand the translation machine from those. Because, those get wild.
This is the only joy I get is seeing salami pop up on the Google Translate.
Can you post a picture of a baby's chest with Barco on it?
I'm not doing that. I'm not encouraging these.
Can you please do that?
Kind of behavior
holding a piece of salami?
Oh my God, no!
Keep it going.
I'm not
man.
Doing it.
Just look. I don't
need
care.
You to break
just
the internet,
make the darn boats,
Jay.
Dude.
I need you to break the internet.
All right, a couple announcements before we take off. February 4th, I believe that's the Super Bowl. That's the reason they're doing this. Timeless Legion's Second South Sunday painting poker throw ball game. So let's make sure we all.
I'm painting with them.
Go to the Facebook group, check it out.
Yeah.
If you want to play,
I'm not playing.
Texas Hold'em, buy us $25 up to 21 players. I think I need to send my money in. But yeah, if you're interested. I think you'll be there. Jay?
Actually, no, I'm going to be at the January. There's another one that I'm going to.
Are you
going
to be there?
There's the paint and poker and play
That's
one. That's
thing.
The one that I'm going
yeah.
to.
Okay.
So,
and I'm painting and only commentating on the poker because I can't play poker.
Kelly
and
I will be there. Josh?
I can read people's faces. I will,
what is this social event?
You read up on Twitter later. You're not listening.
Can I come?
Yeah. Just re-listen to the episode. You'll hear it.
I never get to hang out with you guys.
Okay. Oh, let's not even get that started. That's not even. There's
you
a
never
whole
come
chat
to our tailgate.
Going on Twitter about you guys hanging out. And then I'm like, hi, I'm Kelly. I'm here too.
You can find us on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook, Mouths of South, MOTS Podcast. If you just want to look it up, Twitter, MOTS, at MOTS Podcast. Jay, how can they find you?
At @JY_Riddle.
Josh?
Josh B914, tweet me with those hilarious Google Translate, please.
Don't be a salami.
Please, we got to get through this together, y'all. #Kelly? Barco Watch.
The Kelly Francis.
And you can find me at Eric G. Quintana. If you want to donate to the podcast, patreon.com/MOTS podcast. We want to do some cool stuff moving forward. We want to be able to have the live stream we do on Facebook actually a lot more listenable than it is now. Right now, it's not great. Is something we do just for fun because we can. So give a if you have the means, feel free to donate. And other than that, check out Dirty South Soccer for all the latest on the Barco update stuff. And CrossFit Vesuvio, give them a look if you're interested in doing the CrossFit stuff. Until next time, see you later, Atlanta.